Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, your co-host and producer of the program. Here with my posse, Mr. Gary Baker down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Edward Allen Studio, and we are delighted to have Shane Hamlin with us as well. The master of gaming is going to be with us and helping to answer questions during our program. We're going to be looking at the call for a cyber command from the United States, and we'll talk at that with Richard Steenen coming up, along with a few other things as well. Once again, welcome to the Internet Advisor. 2 hours of programming here on WJR in our 19th year, heading toward our 20th. Mr. Gary Baker with us from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. How are you doing, Gary? You're cool down there. You say cool? Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, it's only 80-something.
That is cool compared to up here. We got a lot of humidity and a little bit of heat as well. Edward Dale, good to have you around.
Always great to be
been
here.
Been a lazy, hazy week for you, hasn't it?
Took a vacation week, didn't do anything. This is the way it should be.
The hammock.
I think at the most I did was change a tire, you know.
He needs to come down there.
So that's a staycation, Ed?
Yes, exactly. And I you know what? I should have thought of that. If Gary needed his boat polished or barnacles removed, I could have flown down there.
Done a little scuba, huh?
I'll tell you what, there's always work to do here.
I bet there is. Another voice you heard is Shane Hamlin. Shane, good to have you in with us.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
It's always good to see your smiling face here. Shane is also one of our tech experts and somebody who has an eye on gaming. By the way, this is a big week for Comic-Cons. Am I right?
Yeah, Comic-Con is happening in San Diego. That's the mecca of geekdom.
I thought that was like 2 months ago it was somewhere else as the mecca of geekdom.
Well, I mean, it moves.
Oh, okay,
it's
okay.
It's a
moving mecca.
Yes, it is. But this is the Holy Land. This is the big one.
Oh, okay.
According to, well, everything on the West Coast has got to be the big one, right?
That's so right.
The
that's
best
true.
Of the best. But I like our Detroit Comic Con just as well.
That certainly was a draw crowd pleaser this year, wasn't it?
It's getting bigger and bigger every year here in Michigan, and it's those guys do a great job over there in Novi. And I look forward to come to Detroit one day. One day, move downtown would be great.
Now, what was that? Unicon or that's at the Ren Center?
There's a couple flops out there. There's some that don't do very well.
Yeah.
There was Penguin.
Not the Unicon.
Penguin
does okay, pretty good. That's a fun one to go to.
Sure.
There's a lot of them out there, but some of them you show up and I think you're the only one or two people there, and you're like, oh.
Oops.
Yeah, but
I got dressed up for this.
You know, you're right. But, you know, the San Diego Comic-Con, that's where all the great cosplay goes down, costume play, you know, dress up as your favorite player or anime. And it's a lot of movie releases now.
I was going to say movie releases and
That's right.
Not
yeah.
so much Oilers. Gaming anymore. It used to be more, it had more gaming involved, but now it's more, you know, they let E3 and all those handle the gaming. But, you know, Comic-Con's a place to be, I guess.
It's still enormous. I mean, just in terms of, it's kind of hard to get your mind wrapped around it, but this is huge.
Okay, I have to ask, what did Conan come out this year as? Remember, he was the spokesman, and he opens up every night, and you know, usually, you know, when the Conan show starts off, he has that big old red flare, and it shows him walking around in big monster boots from the previous year.
I haven't even seen him yet.
I haven't seen him yet.
No.
So.
I know they've had some great announcements. I mean, you know, a lot of the new, you know, some of the Star Wars stuff has been released.
Oh, that's right,
yeah. And the Walking Dead trailer for the new season was released.
Did you guys, speaking of big announcements, yeah. and this is switching entirely, did you see that two of the largest dark web sites were taken down
and
this week?
That's just the beginning, I hear. I mean, they're going after them all.
Wow. You know? And it almost seems unthinkable that they'd be able to crack that because they haven't for so long. But
like, who do you go after? I'm like,
yeah. Well, it's been an international affair, as I understand, Gary. It's been Europol, am I right, with the International Police Force and the FBI and all over the place. They're really going after them because this is really serious with the damage that they're doing with this. And it's also a place for, what are some of the other things that are sold on the dark web?
Well, besides drugs and weapons and
kidneys.
Movie releases, movie information, and then also people's contact information
that's
is sold
right.
there.
Yeah.
That, the stuff that's stolen from websites, from the vulnerabilities right. and security problems they have, they're sold on the dark web for the highest bidder.
Well, we got a little bit of this is a better piece of news here. And matter of fact, it's about our first guest. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Microsoft and their plan to try to connect rural America in particular
with white space
and using the white spaces, et cetera. But the bottom line was that trying to make an impact on rural America with broadband and how hard that has been. Well, we have with us, by the way, right now, we're going to be talking with him a little further in just a moment, Stu Johnson. He's the Vice President of Digital Work. Stu, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
I was glad to be on.
Yeah, you folks just had a big celebration in a little town. And for us, this is important because it represented the connection between broadband internet and Newaygo, Michigan, just a little bit north of Grand Rapids.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great location. It's a great town. DigitalWorks is a program of Connected Nation, and our mission is to advocate for broadband access, adoption, and use. So on the access side, we do broadband mapping for the state of Michigan and some other states around the nation and USAC and some other federal governments. And then we get involved in research and data to look for barriers to adoption. So we got into training. And then we found that a lot of the people that came to our training were job seekers. So we thought, wouldn't it be great if we had a jobs component? And it just so happens the fastest growing segment of the workforce is the teleworker, the solopreneur, the non-traditional worker. So we've partnered with about 70 employers, and we've been working with Newaygo for quite some time. There's some seasonal work demand up there where people don't have a lot of opportunities, and we're hoping to fill that gap with a wonderful center and a wonderful community. And we got our first class done, and that's when we don't have an opening until we have people cashing paychecks.
Yeah,
because we're not really a training center, we're a work center. So we had that last week, and it was terrific.
That's fantastic. Now, you were at a place called The Stream. Well, what is The Stream?
Yeah, it's a great story. Newaygo had a historic hotel, and it burnt down. And the community leaders, wanted to create a showcase for the town there, and they built an absolute beautiful building. It has some retail, other things there.
Fantastic. Stu, I tell you what, hang on a second. I want to hear the rest of the story of The Stream.
Okay.
That sounds really fantastic. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Stu Johnson, who's the Vice President of DigitalWorks. By the way, coming up, we're going to be talking about establishing that independent military cyber command here in the country. My thanks to Mike Stett, who is our engineer and is helping us along the road as well by helping to produce the program. You're listening to the Internet Advisor, hour number one, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Shane Hamlin here. You know, guys, we talk about, like when Microsoft was on, we were talking about the white spaces, the TV and things like that, and making things happen in rural areas of our country.
Right. I mean, we used to have the M5 project and then the Michigan Broadband Authority.
Right.
And then everything just sort of, after a year or two, there's nothing. You don't hear anything.
What I loved when I saw this news about what was going on in Newaygo, Michigan was, this is it. This is something practical that's happening here. And that's why I wanted our audience to hear about it, because I think it's exciting that this kind of thing is happening. And we're talking with, by the way, today, Stu Johnson. He is the Vice President of Digital Works. And DigitalWorks, why don't you explain what DigitalWorks is and how it connects with Connected Nation?
Sure. So we are a program, just like you know, the YMCA has health clubs. So we are a program within DigitalWorks that helps visualize our message, because there's no greater impact than when you can have somebody that doesn't have access to internet and therefore probably doesn't have a computer and therefore probably doesn't know how to use one. Mm-hmm. And with after 4 weeks with us, they're earning a paycheck by that very same technology.
I love it. I love it. And that's what's happening basically in Nuevo, right, with this project that you have, you put on, and you celebrated this last week.
Absolutely. It's great. And, you know, it's a co-working center. They we partnered with the city of Nuevo, and they have a wonderful facility. But co-working spaces are great in Detroit and Grand Rapids, opening every day. But in the rural areas or in blighted urban areas like Flint, they don't work because they don't create the demand. So we create the demand to fill the co-working space. And then more importantly, we create the ecosystem to keep those people employed and mentorship, additional training so that they can advance their career. So by default, it's wonderful. If there's no opportunities in that particular rural area, we can bring companies like Microsoft, Apple, U-Haul, Allstate. I mean, premium companies that are dying to find people that can work from home, that have the skills and the technology and the facilities in this case. But it's also by design. You know, we see a lot of millennials. I mean, imagine if you could do your job from wherever you wanted, you may or may not be, you might be down in Florida, you know.
Yeah, like Gary.
or you're down in Florida in the winter and up here in the summer, because there's no better place to be than Michigan in the summer.
And the best part is
it's out there.
Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, and the best part is you could drive down 90, you know, 75, I-75, and still be connected.
Exactly. But, you know, as you said, it doesn't work without broadband.
Yes.
Now, we have some employers that, quite frankly, you could probably do the work on a wireless connection. But when you get into, we have gaming counselors. You guys were talking about gaming.
Yeah.
If you're going to work for Microsoft and be a gaming counselor, you need a minimum of 5 meg committed upload speed and about 20 meg down. And unless you're in a Google city, that just isn't available in a residential package. So until we get more and more robust broadband, it's going to be a challenge. Now, again, Nuevo has the opportunity that people can work from that center with that fiber connection. And if we get them an employer that they qualify for to work at home, that's great. But until we have more coverage, those people are going to be on the wrong side of the divide.
Gary, go ahead.
So now are you working with other economic development organizations? I know Right Place is there in Grand Rapids, and there's a number of other small business development centers and SCORE locations. Are you working with any of the other agencies?
Yeah, we are in 6 states right now, soon to be 8, knock on wood. And, you know, it started out really kind of as a workforce program kind of feel. And given the way our current workforce programs are structured, telework doesn't fit in there real good. So it truly is more of an economic development play. It's creating jobs from, you know, platinum employers and bringing them to your community and creating, you know, payroll revenue. The one of the challenges with economic development is it doesn't create any real estate value. It doesn't create investment into the community with, you know, parking lots and smokestacks. And so it's a little bit less attractive than, you know, getting a factory. But, you know, we're in a community, and I won't mention the community. I don't want to embarrass them. But we create a couple jobs a month, and they haven't created 10 jobs in the last 10 years.
Wow. Well, I'm just curious. So, go ahead, Gary. Sorry.
Yeah, so when you're talking about a remote workforce, do you pay attention to teaming and collaboration and helping not only the individual that's remote, but companies that want to manage that remote workforce? Are there programs around something like that?
Yeah, we get involved, and really it's, you know, we aren't a school or anything like that. That's another challenge we have, is we're kind of hard to define. But we don't build programs unless they're employer designed. So, you know, for example, I'm working on a contract with a company that's looking for 10 teleworkers immediately, and then 3 or 4 a month. And I'll understand what are they looking for us to do? What are the skills that that are required, or their assessments mm-hmm. that we can provide to make them presentable? Do they want us to provide ongoing management, ongoing training? Would they like to use our facilities to do video conferencing? Do they want us to train? You know, some of the jobs are 1099. Should we provide some accounting and legal counseling and some other wraparound services? Because really, again, the system doesn't work without that ecosystem on the back end.
Yep.
Because that's why the companies have such a hard time with retention right now. Is it's a lonely job. It's a lonely job by design.
Yeah,
some people can aspire to that. Other ones need that social interaction,
yep,
and we
exactly.
try to provide that.
Stu Johnson is our guest here. He's a vice president of Digital Works, which is Connected Nation, which is part of a nationwide effort to connect communities through broadband to the internet. What is your reaction to, or your comment about Microsoft's announcements this past week about using the TV wideband segment to help to extend, along with other things, to make a significant impact into rural America? Really connect those 23 million some odd people out there?
Yeah. Well, there's no question it's an extremely extremely powerful spectrum. And it's been around. I mean, it's been around. There's been talk. There's obviously the equipment involved. The radios have been extremely expensive. And then you've got the regulatory issues behind the licensure of that spectrum. So it's going to take some work. But the prices are coming down. There's no, you know, the power of that spectrum to penetrate it would far exceed what we have now.
Yeah.
So I am absolutely all for it. I think it takes the private-public partnership, as Microsoft is presenting. Also, you know, Microsoft's talking about doing training and some other things that go mm-hmm. along with it, because mm-hmm. technology in and of itself doesn't solve anything. Technology doesn't disrupt. People disrupt. So if you send that spectrum out and nobody has to use it, I don't care how sexy your gaming is or your applications are, they're going to fail. So you've got to develop that adoption and use on the other side. So there'll be some regulatory issues. I know some of the owners of that spectrum will be reluctant,
yep.
even though they could certainly use the revenue, because most of those people are watching, you know, through cable anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of exciting things. You know, satellite's getting better. There's a lot of exciting things. But my challenge with any technology is, regardless of the technology, they are still going to be deployed where that provider can get the highest ROI.
Return on investment, exactly.
So if 5G comes out, I'm telling you, 5G is going to be in Chicago before it's in Nuevo. I mean,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
If it was technology, everybody would have DSL by now. You're still going to have the problem of coverage and consumption against that investment.
Yeah, Stu, maybe a final question for you. How is Nuevo reacting to what you guys have done there? What's it done for them?
It's been real positive, but I tell you, you know, it doesn't gain momentum until people start cashing checks. It's hard to understand. Some people think work at home is a scam. They don't understand it, and a lot of the folks we're trying to serve, you know, they won't respond to a postcard or a billboard, but they'll respond to their cousin cashing a $700 check.
That's right. Stu Johnson, thanks so much for being with us. Good to have you on, Internet Advisor. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Edward Dell, and Shane Hamblin here. And guys, I was fascinated by this headline, and that was that this week it was announced that there is an effort going on right now to create an independent military cyber command that is being moved forward by politicians, et cetera.
Another one?
Well, that's exactly it. That is exactly it.
There must be like 6 or 7 of them.
There's a whole 5 at least that I have. Matter of fact, if you go to internetadvisor.net, I have all their logos lined up, and there's 5 of them that are there. But I wanted to try to see if we could sort this out. So there's 2 sources that I'm going to talk about for this. One of them is, I should just mention that Dan Lorman couldn't be with us on the show today, but I pre-recorded a conversation with him. Dan is somebody who's been involved in cybersecurity for the state of Michigan for a long time and is now a security mentor. But Dan and I talked, and we recorded that conversation. It's available on our homepage if you go to internetadvisor.net. But somebody who is has even written novels about this whole concept of cyber war, etc., is none other than a friend of ours, Mr. Richard Steenen. And Richard, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Good to have you on the air with us.
Thank you, Foster. Good to be back. One correction, I haven't written any novels.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All my books are nonfiction.
Well, let's get your perspective, first of all, on this. What in the world are we doing creating a new cyber warfare command when we've already got, we were teasing about this, I think it's like five of them existing already, and I got their logos up on our homepage.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's an evolution, and it's fun to watch because anybody who's been in enterprise security has seen this happen. You know, if you're at a big bank, you know, first there's a director of, you know, desktop security who does antivirus, and then there are all sorts of network attacks, so you have to have all these firewalls, and pretty soon there's a director of network security, and by 1995, Citigroup was appointing CISOs, et cetera. And the military is going through these phases just lagged about 10 years. So Keith Alexander was, think of him as the director of network security in a branch of the military in 2007, 2008, when the famous agent that BTZ worm spread throughout the entire network and infected, you know, a lot of machines. It's very telling that they never really figured out what machines were infected. They just went ahead and re-imaged 3 million Windows desktops throughout the military.
Yeah.
And I estimate that, you know, cost at least $1 billion in man hours.
Wow.
And that was the so-called wake-up call that the Assistant Secretary of Defense, William Lynn, called it. They called it, they had a code name for it, Buckshot Yankee. And that was the impetus for elevating Keith Alexander to the head of the NSA and the head of this newly formed U.S. Cyber Command.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the history. But people have been arguing different things. You know, U.S. Cyber Command is a, what's the term, a sub-unified command of STRATCOM, Strategic Command, the same guys who run our nuclear missile forces in the Space Command.
Okay.
And but it's still under the four-star that leads the NSA. And people said, you know what, first of all, it should be a combatant command, just like, you know, the Central Command and the Pacific Command and all the rest of those commands, because it's a new domain, as the military keeps calling it. But this is, I think, a step along that way. They said, you know, the NSA has become, you know, so focused on its mission of gathering signals intelligence. Also, by the way, kind of was born by Keith Alexander, at least according to our friend Michael Hayden. He was the genius behind Collect Everything.
Okay.
And he ended up, so, you know, he's obviously focused on managing the cyber commands for the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps has their own cyber commands.
Yes, and the Coast Guard has. I was surprised.
Even Coast Guard, yeah. And they all report up to him, ostensibly, but they're kind of independent. And he spends all, you know, now Michael Rogers is the head of, you know, took over for Alexander. And he certainly spends a lot of time on the lecture circuit. And besides that, he took the NSA, which used to be broken into two halves, the Signals Intelligence Directorate, SID, and the Software Assurance Directorate, SAD, which was supposed to be kind of the yin and yang. They were supposed to help the country be protected against cyber attacks. And
I'm getting a headache from all these complications.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Oh, my. Wow.
So last year, they combined the two. They got rid of SAD. So
okay.
Now the NSA doesn't have a Software Assurance Directorate, and that's left a lot of holes in some of the great work they were doing on certification and you know, product reviews and all the rest. So I believe this move that AP announced, you know, was in the works.
It was on Tuesday, I think it was.
Yeah, is a move to, you know, let's first break it away, put it, you know, back in the Pentagon kind of thing where it belongs, get it away from those spooks. and then we can start developing, you know, our warfighting capability.
Yeah.
Because
they
really do have to ultimately have teams of people who are capable of, one, defending, but two,
also
you know,
taking
in
direct
a theater of battle doing the offensive.
But Richard Steenen is our guest here. He's a longtime commentator, well-recognized internationally for his expertise in cybersecurity. I mean, aren't we already doing that? It's not like we're going to start doing that. I mean, we've been actively, at least the perspective that you've had in your works is that we've already at it. We're already at it. We're doing it already.
Yeah, we're certainly doing it. So this is just, you know, rearrange things. It's becoming more important.
Okay.
So they need to elevate it and get a better control over it. And a lot of the, you know, the super sleuthy stuff that they've done, like Stuxnet, came out of a division of the NSA called TAO, that Tailored Access Operations. And they're the ones who actually design implants and sneak them into stuff, you know, that are being shipped somewhere.
Yeah, that's pretty active penetration. Okay.
Yeah, very active penetration.
Now, and that comes that brings up a question, you know. As I started unraveling this thing, I looked at these, you know, five symbols that I have on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, you know, of these different cyber, you know, for everything from the Coast Guard to the Navy to the Air Force, the Marines have got their own. You know, it would seem to be a tremendous amount of duplication of effort. And when you do that, aren't you risking diluting your ability to make a real coordinated, you know, impact?
I agree with that completely. But, you know, this is the military. They've got hundreds of years of experience of dealing with change. And so, you know, they didn't, when the machine gun was first deployed, you know, they had specialty batteries of machine guns who go around. And they discovered over time that they had to embed the machine gun operators into the regular battalions. And that, you know, we developed all that during World War II.
Okay.
And I think they've taken that same approach.
Okay.
They said, oh, my gosh, we all need cyber. And a bunch of people wanted to jump on the latest thing because there was money being spent on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we got this dispersal. But I think it should be pulled back and have a little more centralization.
Now, what is your read on this moving from Mike Rogers' hands to, the particular piece of note that I have here. Lieutenant General William Mayville is the person that they're recommending for this job. He's had a lot of combat experience in Iraq and Afghanistan. How do you read that?
I'm very interested in for two reasons. One is it's a lieutenant general, so it's not, you know, at the elevation of a four-star, so it'll be a little bit more in, you know, they'll be able to put somebody above them, right, who can direct them and oversee them more easily.
Oh, okay.
And if he's got combat experience in Iraq and Afghanistan, he was right in the middle of what the author, what was his first name? But his last name, Shane, who wrote about a different kind of definition of cyber war, and it was the Iraqi insurgent forces that they deployed.
Oh, ISS, and, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they made a significant effort of controlling the cell phone towers, intercepting conversations. You know, they could you know, shut off signals to IEDs or set them off before they're placed. They did tremendous things, and if you think about it, they're using cell phones and intelligence gathered from them to conduct a counterinsurgency war. Really where, you know, their boots on the ground, and I think having somebody like Lieutenant General Mayville in there would focus the Army's efforts on that kind of thing.
Richard, we've run out of time, but never enough space to come talk about this conversation with you. Thank you so much for being with us just to kind of open this back up. We're going to have you back on to talk about this as it develops and gets more concrete. He's written, by the way, Richard's written a book called There Will Be Cyber War, and this certainly looks like a step to concretize the forces that will be behind that right now. Thank you, Richard, for being with us here. Early this week, on Monday, headlines appeared that the United States is about to create an independent military cyber command. And we wanted to find out a little bit more about what that meant, that it was going to become an independent command. And so we have checked in with somebody who has been involved in cyber security in our state of Michigan and involved in computer works of our fair state for many, many years, 17 years in all. Now is chief security officer at a company called Security Mentor, and that's Dan Lorman. Dan, thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Good to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Foster, for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, Dan, help parse this a little bit for us. Because as I understand, the whole notion of a cyber command, if you will, has been around since 2009 under President Obama. Am I right?
That's exactly right. Yep. And headquartered there at the National Security Agency outside of Washington.
So what is actually going to be changing with what's being proposed here in terms of the quote unquote independent command?
Yeah, I think the first thing is they haven't formally done this yet, but it reported that it's going to happen. So to make that clear to your listeners, but also it looks like it would be split off, so it wouldn't be part of the National Security Agency, really run in the same way you have, you know, air, sea, and water, you know, in the military. You'd sure. have cyber as a command. And it would be an independent organization, probably physically move as well from Fort Meade.
Well, what's the value of that independence to the Cyber Command?
Sure. Well, I think that both the Obama administration and the Trump administration seem to agree now that the separation out the intelligence from the actual war fighting, you know, there's been a lot of discussion back and forth around could you stop ISIS, the attacks, not just, you know, cyber attacks coming from really all over the world, different right. organizations. Mm-hmm. But there was maybe some squabbles going on around the topic of, you know, were we gathering intelligence around ISIS and things, or were we trying to stop, you know, networks, terrorist networks and things from, you know, causing damage, mm-hmm. Attacking our country. So, you know, the ability to gather intelligence and then and fight the war, prosecute the war, I think that's really one of the fundamental questions.
So one of the things that was reflected in the New York Times article was that is essentially when they split off, however, it looks like in some ways the Cyber Command is going to have to duplicate some of those intelligence gathering mechanisms that NASA had out there, or pardon me, NSA had out there. But NSA, in essence, has most of the high-level talent.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a challenge at first. I'm sure they're going to work together. I mean, I don't know if you knew this. I started my career at the National Security Agency.
Oh,
worked
wow.
Actually back in 85. So I was there from 85 to 91 and actually worked with a number of companies in England in the intelligence community in the 90s. And, you know, there's a very close relationship. I imagine that's going to continue. But clearly, as far as command and control and lines of authority, roles and responsibilities, they're going to change. And I do think that will be, you know, a lot of articles about that over the last week related to the fact that there would be challenges with talent. How do you actually balance that out as far as, you know, keeping that?
Dan, so since 1985, you've been involved in the cybersecurity.
We didn't call it cybersecurity back in those days. You know, it was information security and but absolutely computer security. And I actually have been going back to 85. Been working on that. Yep.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, one of the other things, Dan, that I want, well, Dan Lorman, by the way, is our guest here. He is the chief security officer at a company called Security Mentor Incorporated, but was chief security for the state of Michigan from 2011 to 2014 and held many other roles for about 17 years in our state government. Dan, one of the things that I wonder about, though, is that with this creation of a separate cyber command, military command, are we going to get a lot of duplication of effort? Because I believe the Air Force, the Army, Marine, and, you know, Navy, everybody's got their own cyber segment going already.
I think that's a valid concern. I think, you know, the devil's going to be in the details. I think that's happening right now, quite frankly. I think, you know, if you talk all the different, even the reserves, they all have different aspects of cyber. And, you know, it's a really good point. I think one of the challenges are, you know, as far as authority, you know, who does what, roles and responsibilities have to be broken out. But I actually think that this makes a lot of sense, that both sides really need to be clear about the intelligence gathering role versus the, you know, cyber mm-hmm. offensive and defensive capabilities that the military has. And I think the idea here is, you know, in the same way the intelligence community is separate from the, you know, the military, the mm-hmm. DOD, Department of Defense, hopefully this will clarify those roles and responsibilities. But, I think you raise great questions. I think that's going to have to be worked out as these plans are implemented.
Now, maybe one final thing for you, since you're familiar with this area. The person who was in charge of the cyber operations as they were together, I believe, under that 2009 development of a cyber unit, was Admiral Mike Rogers. Am I right?
Yep, that's correct. Yep.
Okay.
Still is.
The person that they're talking about, taking it over, if you will, I think, is Army Lieutenant General William Mayville. And from what I can see in the article here, he is somebody who has had a lot of ground perspective on military action. He was in Iraq and Afghanistan. What are your thoughts on him coming in and taking over?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, emphasize again for the listeners that this has not been formally, I'll say rumors, because they're more than that. They're very, very likely announcements that are coming shortly. But I think he would do a great job. I mean, I think Admiral Rogers has done a really great job, Mike Rogers. I think the reality is that people thinks maybe he had too much power. So I think one of the challenges that's going to be existing is going to be the roles and responsibilities, who has what authority, and kind of dividing that up. Is it all kind of in Admiral Rogers' hands, or is it in others? And I think, certainly, I think the new team can certainly, William Mayville can do, Lieutenant General Mayville can do a really good job. So I think he's very competent.
Yep.
And I think he's nominated to lead the Cyber Command, and I think he would do a great job.
Final question, but does this, Dan, look like, putting up the, what they call it, raising up the flagpole and seeing who salutes, trying to get, with the public reaction to this?
Yeah, I think there's some of that going on as well. I think, floating the concept and then also getting feedback really across, Washington, and, this is a big deal. I mean, I will say the future, is in the virtual world. It's in cyberspace. I think a lot of the experts that I talked with really around the world feel like this is kind of inevitable. It's going to happen. There was a lot of talk about it at the end of the Obama administration. Trump administration seems to be getting very close to formally announcing this. So I think this is going to happen. And I think that there's a little bit of trial balloon out there floating specific details, and then maybe adjusting the plan and then going forward.
All right, Dan, thanks so much for being with us. And I don't know, maybe I'm being facetious in this, but this might be one of President Trump's few victories if it gets through for him. It started under the Obama administration, but I don't think he minds working with this one. Dan Lorman, thank you again for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. And as always, it's good talking to you about the security measures.
Thanks so much, Foster. Appreciate it.
Thank you as well.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this hour of the Internet Advisor. Quite a variety of topics that we've been touching on, everything from broadband connection to rural areas to possibly a brand new phase of our defense, and that is a new cyber warfare unit being created. With us right now, and this is the time of the show when we bring in Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News. And matter of fact, Mike was a co-author with Richard Steenen on a book about cyber war. Am I right on that, Mike? I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It was called Cyber Stiletto. It's still available.
That's right.
And took real life. It was back. We actually outed Israel and the U.S. For launching the Stuxnet virus a year before the New York Times did. We didn't get any credit for it. But it's a cybercrime thriller based on real people, real incidents, but we just changed the names. There are no innocent to protect, but we just changed the names. Right?
So. That is fascinating, yeah, and that ties into this whole business about the Cyber Command being created. Well, Mike, with MI Tech News, folks, is a gathering of information about technology and entrepreneurship in the state of Michigan. It now has been expanded to include a number of podcasts and video elements to it. And Mike, we're going to do something a little bit different today. We generally touch on a few of the headlines that you have, and we're going to be doing that today. But we have a guest that we're going to introduce in just a moment to talk about one of those headlines. But maybe before that, let's just quickly, a couple of things I see down here. Well, first of all, we talked about this, was the feds shut down two of the dark web's biggest purveyors of illegal goods. And what was it, Ed, you or Shane was asking, is there another one that's popped back up? They're kind of like mushrooms.
Well, I'm not sure if one's popped back up, but they took two down, and one of them was by far the biggest. That would be Alphabay. And it was on the dark web, and you could only access it through the Tor browser. So, I mean, you couldn't, like, use your Chrome browser to get there.
Mm.
And the other one was called Hansa. But there was actually a very coordinated attack. Not only was the Department of Justice involved, but Europol was involved. And they just shut them down. And they were big, 200,000 customers, 40,000 sellers. And this is really, really illegal stuff that you can't buy anywhere else. You know, arms and drugs and you name it.
Yeah, and a lot of, Ed, you were saying it, I think, you know, a lot of those lists of credit card numbers and things like that.
Yeah, a lot of auctioning off of people's private information.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even most recently with the Pirates of the Caribbean movie leaked, that was there, I mean, for sale, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, another report you have down there, and this one is kind of scary, and I'm seeing more reports like this out there. Technology may automate half of all low-skilled jobs in the U.S. I mean, starting, no, I've been a truck driver, so pardon me, I don't mean this to be a slap against truck drivers, because it takes a good deal of skill to do that kind of thing, but there's a less, if you will, skilled in some other professions. But
ironically, truck drivers are in great demand right now, but when we get into autonomous vehicles at some point in the future, then you're going to have caravans of trucks. It's pretty much like a railroad train running down the highway, and you won't need the drivers.
They're experimenting with that in Europe, too.
Yeah. There's some other scary stuff that comes out of this report. It even says that STEM jobs are threatened by a lot of this artificial intelligence or the automation and things like that. And STEM is what, you know, those jobs, science, technology, engineering, and math, are a huge demand here in the country. And they can't get enough people to do that, and you can write your own ticket when you have those skills. But those also are not the things that the jobs that are safe are the ones where you have the touchy-feely kind of thing, like recreational therapists, frontline supervisors, mental health workers. You can't really automate those, but all this other stuff is really up for grabs.
Wow. And but I mean, what shocked me was the statement that half of all low-skilled jobs in the U.S. are up for grabs. That's scary.
Yeah.
That is really scary. All right. What I want to move on to, though, is a fascinating headline you had here about the Supreme Court ruling that the First Amendment rights extend to augmented reality video games. And we have somebody with us to join the conversation. I'd like to welcome Brian Wassum from Warner Norcross and Judd. He's an attorney there. And I'll let you, Mike, give a little bit more background on him. But welcome, Brian.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, actually, the person that should be talking about is Brian. I essentially, he sent me all this stuff on Thursday, the court ruling. I did an interview with him. He's the expert. He's the one, actually, that was in court defending Candy Lab. So, Brian, I think, actually, instead of me just repeating what you told me, it probably should come straight from you.
Okay. Well, just one minor point of clarification, Buff. You flatter me. I haven't quite made it to the Supreme Court yet. This is a decision from a federal trial court.
Okay.
But, yeah, I'll wait till it gets there, and then we can come back and talk about how the Supreme Court rules.
Okay.
But anyway, this whole situation stems from last summer's introduction of Pokemon Go and the huge craze that surrounded that. We just did hit the one-year anniversary of that release. And Milwaukee, like, you know, every large city across the country, really, had to deal overnight with unusually large crowds of people flocking to these public places, because that's where Niantic, the company that released the game, located its GameStop. And this was not by far the first augmented reality location-based game. And this type of game has been out for a long time. It's just the first one that really hit.
Yeah, and it did hit.
Caught a lot of people by surprise. Yeah. And so, you know, every other city in the country dealt with it more or less like they do with any other public crowd situation. They regulated the people that are actually out there. So if the problem is having too many people in your park, well, you control access to the park. If the problem is after hour violations or nuisance or littering or whatever else, you ticket the people that do those things.
Okay.
The problem here is that Milwaukee got too clever by half. You know, they have one supervisor there in particular who ran this bill through their board who decided, I'm going to skip one step ahead. I'm going to go one level up in the chain And I'm not going to regulate the people playing the games. I'm going to regulate the companies that are publishing them. And I'm going to say that you can't even release a game that people can play in Milwaukee parks without our permission, without a permit from the county.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
And that's when you start to run into constitutional problems, because you know the First Amendment has an issue with regulating the publication of content. And so that's the basis of the claim that we filed. I didn't file, Mike mentioned, my client was not Niantic. This wasn't directly about Pokemon. It was about a game called Texas Rope'em. It's another augmented reality location-based game, happens to be themed around poker, yep. Put out by a company called Candy Lab AR down in the San Diego area.
We don't have much time here, but what do you see as the long-term implications of this particular ruling?
Sure. Well, the immediate implication is that people who are out there creating AR content can have a little bit more confidence that the courts are going to protect their expression just as much as we do in any other medium, whether be it video games or books or movies or TV, whatever else, radio. The courts will recognize, hopefully, if this trend continues, as I think it will, because judges tend to get these issues right, that the First Amendment is very, very strict about permitting people's rights to publish.
Gotcha.
So you're going to see more backlash. You know, anytime you have a new medium of expression, 20 years ago when the internet was new, we had a lot of knee-jerk reactions like this. Oh, wait a minute, we can't have that. Until society gets used to it and starts to settle out, we realize, hey, this is just another way of expressing ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. Brian Wassenbe is with us. He is an attorney with Warner, Norcross, and Judd. And I know, Mike, you have Brian on periodically on your M Squared TechCast, you and Matt Rausch, right?
Yeah, he's going to be on Monday, in fact.
Oh, good. So you're going to be speaking at more length about that, Brian, on Monday?
That's the plan, yep.
Excellent. Okay. And Mike, just quickly, let folks know about M Squared TechCast and how people can tune in to listen to that.
Well, we're on the podcast Detroit Network, so we're not a terrestrial like you guys are, but we're internet, which means everybody in the world can listen live from 3 to 4 at podcastdetroit.com, to say network. and then afterwards, we offer it as an MP3 file that we promote vigorously on the website, in the newsletters, on social media. And that's hopefully, in the case of Warner, Norcross, and Judd, they'll promote it to their audience as well, I'm sure.
Excellent.
So we'll get a lot of play out of this. And then Brian has also just been named the co-chair of the new, what's the exact name of the group, Brian? Emerging Media and Connected Devices,
to capture all this stuff.
Guys, thank you so much. We're wrapping up our first hour here, but I want Brian Wassenbe, thank you so much for being with us and sharing this interesting. And Mike, as always, another great, fascinating topic from MI Tech News. You have yourself a good week, all right?
All right, thanks, Jeff Foster. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys, that's Mike Brennan, and it's mitechnews.com. To sign up for your copy of that, simply go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down to Mike's smiling face, and you can sign up there, or go to mitechnews.com, put your email address in, and you're on your way back to answer your questions.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter, and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard, hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown. Gary Baker is with us from Fort Liberty, Florida. Ed Rudell and Shane Hamlin are in studio. And, matter of fact, I'm waving on Skype to some of the folks who are on Gary's boat right now. We're in contact with them. But the most important thing is we're here for you folks. Here's the number, 800-859-0957. Lots of good technical advice waiting for you here at the Internet Advisor. Welcome back. It's hour number two. That is your hour. We call it that because that's exactly what we're committed to. And we've been doing this for nigh on 20 years. Gary and I and the tech experts who join us every Saturday are here in our second hour to answer your questions. And the key is getting in early. Get your questions in then at 800-859-0957, like Joe from Hamtramck. We'll be getting to him in just a moment. But we're here until 7 o'clock this evening, so please do give us a call from anywhere you can hear the sound of our voices here. Shane, I was curious to get your reaction to that last news piece with Mike.
About Mike
Brennan about the
parks
augmented reality ruling.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot more than just this, you know, the state or shutting down the gaming.
Oh, the city of Milwaukee.
The city, going after the company and saying you're not going to do this. But it's also, you know, I run into this a lot with, you know, with parks, city parks. You know, the people that live around these city parks, they almost claim them as a private park, their own private property. And I'm one of those guys that like sneaking in. I'm not sneaking in, but I like hitting some of these little private city parks that have lakes, and I like doing a little bass fishing. And what, you know,
I love it.
And they come out, they literally chase you off the lake. You'd be surprised how many times they chase you off the lake because they think it's their lake. And you're a stranger who never seen. And they get this way, you know?
Yeah.
I was thinking, you know, all these people are coming out when the Pokemon thing was happening, and all these people were going to the parks and hanging out and doing all that great stuff.
I thought
stuff.
That was a great thing.
And then they're complaining. I'm thinking, boo-hoo, you know what? You should be happy that people are visiting your park.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you don't like the littering, go after the people. Like I said, there's laws already in place to take care of all that stuff. And I'm just glad he went after those guys and won that case.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see how much further that goes. I know the Pokemon, as far as I could tell, for instance, in downtown Royal Oak, where we live, that's pretty well passed.
It's done, yeah. It's fad is over.
Another great American fad. Yes. All right, let's get out to our first caller, Joe from Hamtramck. Joe, welcome to the Internet Advisor, and I'm glad you took the advice to give us an early call. What can we do for you?
All righty, thanks, guys. Yeah, I'm thinking about picking up a new laptop. I was over at Micro Center today, and I've done a little bit of background research here. I'm not real good on all the terms in technology. However, it basically comes down to a choice. We're looking at about the $259-$299 price range versus $359-$399, they've got an HP there. It's a HP 250G5 for $299, 4 gig. It's got a 5,400 RPM hard drive, a memory, right? Yeah. Okay. And the HP 15AY130NR, that's $399. Now that's got 8 gig of memory, and it's got the one they're showing on their website is a mechanical hard drive, 5,400 RPM. Mm-hmm. But they had one at the store that had a solid state hard drive.
Yeah, an SSD.
So that solid state better than the 5,400?
Oh, by far, yes. Okay. 5,400 is a fairly slow, honestly slow, but it's on the lower end of the speeds for hard drives. I would have taken both of these that you're looking at, are both i3s probably?
I think so. Yeah. Again, it doesn't come up on the thing, but when I was there, the guy said, you know, this one here compared to the other one, it's about the same price, but that's got the solid state. So he did point that out to me.
In that price range, are they considered free? In that price range, are refurbished, manufacturing refurbished?
No, they're all just marked down.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, they may be marked down. Check that.
Yeah, I would because right now, I mean, the average on those, and especially on the 250 G5, that's the model. It's a model older. There's G6 now and so forth, but the i3s, usually a lot of those are manufacturing refurbished right now.
Yeah.
At that price point. Because a new one, new open box is going for probably around $400 right now, $425.
Right.
But, you know, anytime you can get more RAM, solid state hard drives, because, you know, who needs all the storage now like we used to before?
Yep.
You know, yeah,
exactly.
With the cloud, you know, just don't need it. But anytime you can get more RAM and solid state drive, I'd say go for it, because you're going to see with that solid state drive is things are going to be more instantaneous for you.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You start up your computer and it boots and it's ready to go in like 5 seconds those kind of things.
And you got
to
be careful with refurbished. What my son discovered, at least with refurbished, is he only had a 90-day manufacturer's warranty instead of the original 2-year from at the time it was Sony Vaio. And so he, you know, something happened to it. The hinges broke on it within 9 months. Yeah. And I'm sorry, that was refurbished. You only get 90 days.
Yeah, I mean,
so you got to be very careful.
You can always, you know, refurbish. Yeah, if you need, you know, if you can take the price cut and refurbish, be fine. You know, yeah. But
it depends. It also, I think, depends on what you want to use it for. I mean, if you're going to use it, if you're going to push this thing really hard, then I would say don't cheap it out.
Yeah,
go for a newer machine, not refurbished. Although refurbished. Why do you tell people what refurbished means, guys?
You know, what will happen is you'll get a machine that was either on lease, off lease, or came back with a default or a recall, and they'll go in and fix it, and they'll actually they'll restore it back to factory renew is what they want to consider it. It depends on what it was brought back originally for. You know, if it was a motherboard issue and they caught it and they replaced the motherboards, then fine. You know, then great. But, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about the RAM part of it. The solid state drive is a big one because you can upgrade RAM fairly expensive. But the solid state drive is nice.
Well, that ties into the other half of this question.
All right, wait, hang on a second, Joe. I want you to pause for just a minute because we're coming up on a break right now, and I want to be able to get the full question. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll come back. And then also we have Craig in Ohio. Craig will be getting to your question shortly as well. And the number here, by the way, is 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Ed Rudell and Shane Hamlin in studio here, and Gary Baker is on the boat, ready to put in his 2 cents worth as well and help you out. So get on the phones. We got some help for you right now. Welcome back. By the way, Daniel Mason, thank you so much for being our engineer and our producer. Charm plus experience. I like that combination. All right, let's go back out to Joe from Hamtramck. And Joe, in all fairness to everybody else, I want to make this kind of a quick one so we can get on to some of the other callers who are coming in as well. But you had a second question you wanted to add to the your concerns. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, it kind of ties into the first, though, because old laptop Windows 7, new one Windows 10. I was analyzing this and saying, well, there's no easy way to transfer it over. But then I thought, I really don't need to transfer everything from the old laptop to the new one because all I really am concerned about are the shortcuts that I have on my home screen. I open it up, and there's really I don't have any files. I don't use it for business or anything of that nature. What would I do when I get the new one? Just log in, go to – it probably comes with Internet Explorer or something on it and install Google Chrome and take it from there.
Now, when you say shortcuts, are you talking about your shortcuts for like Google Chrome or the desktop icon shortcuts?
The desktop icons.
Okay, and those are going to websites?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, usually what will happen is, you know, like with your Google Chrome and your Google account, as soon as you log into your Google Chrome browser, it'll keep all those things within the browsers the same. But what you'll have to do is you'll have to actually do a little bit of a data transfer from your new computer to your from your old to your new, and you're gonna want to go into your user profile and grab your desktop folder, and make sure you copy that over.
Okay.
And you can copy it over to a USB flash drive, and then locate a similar folder on your new Windows 10, and then drag it back.
Okay, so the user profile, and what was the other second?
Yeah, it'd be under like your C drive under users, and then there'd be your screen name. And then under their screen name, you'll see several folders, favorites, documents, desktop, and videos, pictures. And what you want to do is grab the desktop folder that's underneath your username, under the user profiles, and you drag that to an external USB flash drive.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, this is on my old one, right?
Yep. And on your new one, basically then you would then, instead of dragging the desktop folder onto your computer, you open... From the USB drive, you open up the desktop folder that you just dragged to it from your new computer, and you'll see all the individual icons that you dragged over from the desktop folder. You select all, and you copy the contents of the folder onto the desktop of the new computer.
I follow you. Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Joe. Thank you so much for giving us a call here as well. Thanks. Good to have you with us. And let's move on now to Craig from Ohio. Craig, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you?
Hey, guys. It's been a couple years. It's good to hear from you again.
Glad you haven't needed the help for that length of time. Let's see what we can do for you.
You know what? I've been following you guys for about 8 years now, and I tell everybody on the planet, no matter where I go.
Appreciate it. I appreciate it, my friend. What can we do for you?
All right, what I got is I got a Dell Inspiron. It's about 4 years old.
Okay.
And I got the Dell products because when I work for Ford Motor Company, I've seen dozens of drop-to-the-floor hits, and they still survive. Mine did. It chipped off the corner on the left side back where the power goes in, you know, and the terminal was like sticking out, and I was using it for a while, but you know, eventually it did fall off, and I don't know how to configure the terminals. There's four wires coming out, and where they go on that terminal. Is any reference I can go to?
Oh, Ed, this sounds like you're tinkering heaven.
Well, I mean, you could go to Dell's website. If you're lucky, on a lot of those laptops, the power connector is actually a little module that you can buy.
Yeah.
If you open up the bottom of the laptop. Yeah. Sometimes those power modules are integrated on the motherboard, and sometimes there's actually, where the motherboard, there's a little jumper cable that goes to this power module where you typically plug the connector into. The simplest would be just to go out and get that new power connector for $5 on eBay or Amazon or something like that. That's one thing. And as far as the power connectors, it's usually 19.5 volts with a common, and then there's a signal wire in there as well. And I think, although the HPs and the Dells look virtually identical, you cannot interchange the power cords. Yeah, you can find the pinouts of those, but I wouldn't go that way. You would really want to buy the appropriate, you know.
Replace the same module.
Yeah, the same module. Or if, you know, Shane, do you have any suggestions?
No, I mean, everything you said was right on, spot on. The thing is, most times I'm seeing now everything is a ribbon. Everything is it's going to be a DC jack with a ribbon attached to it. That little DC jack, it's probably a little silver box, right, with the plug in it?
No, it's black. It's got the wires were soldered on there.
Yeah,
and I looked at it with a magnifying glass with a light. There's no indications on there like red, blue.
Yeah. You can see the wires inside the hole still.
Yeah, the wires are still sticking out.
Yeah, it is a ribbon cable. It's a cable connected to a little jumper that goes on your motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's just wires. I mean, like just small.
Oh, so you haven't actually opened up the laptop itself. You're looking in the back of it.
Right.
It's sort of like looking into a cave and looking at the first 5 feet. Okay.
There's not a ton of DC jacks that are soldered to the motherboard anymore as they once. How old is your machine?
It's got to be every bit of four or five years.
Most likely it's going to be a DC jack attached to a cable attached to the inside. When I say cable, it's all inside the machine. It's not poking out. It's all built. It's all inside guts part of it.
So what you're thinking about doing is just jumpering, extending those out, and then buying a new connector and duct taping it to the back of the computer and plugging it in just so you get power. And believe me, I've done that.
Yeah. Duct tape.
But not duct tape, but, you know, hot glue.
And I meant to tell the other guy, you know, epoxy, all those things work great, you know, getting those little DC jacks to sit in those little seats that they put.
Yeah.
Because they're held in there with these little teeny plastic tabs, and once those break, that thing's just loose and flopping around.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you can search the internet for what the pinouts are of all of those.
And that's what I was going to tell the guy from the previous call. You know, YouTube is your friend. YouTube, type in the model number, and just put power jack, and you'll see the repair sitting right in front of you. The guy will go step by step and show you how to do it.
That's a good.
And
it worked on my brakes on my Dodge.
Right.
There you go.
I tell my wife all the time, I said, you know what, if I had a garage, all I need, I know nothing about cars, but if I had a garage with all the tools and a computer with YouTube, I can fix anything in my car, I bet.
I just brought a acetylene torches for my home because the YouTube video said I had to have them.
There you go. See? Yeah. That's right.
People do anything to get on TV, won't they?
But YouTube told me to, honey.
That's right. It's going to be a new reality show. YouTube it.
All right.
You know, good luck with that. So the computer, great. I assume, doesn't charge up right now because of the power connectors finally giving out.
Oh, the other thing I was thinking about doing was going online and getting, you know, just another Dell same model, probably dirt cheap, and just swapping out the batteries. That'd probably be the easiest.
Well, swapping out the batteries, or you can get swapping out the hard drive, and you have a full working computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
all right, thanks, guys.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much, Greg, for giving us a call. I tell you, just it set off these home technicians. Gary, I don't know. Are you doing the same thing with your boat down there? Are you learning all sorts of marine mechanics? You know, like these guys up here are learning about computers?
You have no idea. Boy, I replaced the pump on one of my air conditioners, and I have a water heater element had to be replaced. I've replaced pump outs on the shower. I've torn apart toilets and emaciators. I got into the diesel and fixed some of the problems that we had there, along with some help. I got some help on the diesel. That was good.
So have you used YouTube for this?
Of course. Are you kidding? I don't know any of this stuff until I go to YouTube.
I love
it. If it's not on YouTube, it can't be real. That's right.
I tell you what, you know, there's a making there for a really good show where for YouTube, I better keep it myself, but if YouTube wants to get on board, you get the professional in their field and a guy that's tech savvy with YouTube, and you put him in and see the exact same job and who can do it the same way. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
That would be an awesome thing.
Oh, yeah.
Or like swapping places?
Yeah, like you're going to go up against a professional mechanic, but all you have is your computer in a garage. Same thing he has, but you're going to go up against his wits, but you're only going to use YouTube for research.
And I only charge half as much.
See? I'm
telling you. I love it. All right, we got Susan from Detroit hanging on. And Susan, what I'm going to do is just take, we're going to hold you off for just a second because we're coming up on a break and I want to be able to take some time listening to your question. But I want to remind everybody else, we're here till 7 o'clock and we have some lines open at 800-859-0957. Again, that's 800-859-0WJR. That's how you get it. That's right. And still plenty of time for questions, and we're going to get some answers for you on those questions as well. So, Susan, we'll be back in just a moment. Hang in there. And for the rest of you, again, the number, 800-859-0957, the Internet Advisor on the air for you. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. You know, guys, I think we got to build a fire in a corner. This air conditioning is working really, really well. It's cold in here. It's hard to think. Maybe some of you out there can't imagine what that feels like because you're up with the humidity.
Well, my teeth was chattering, so I mean, that's why I had my mic muted there. But yeah,
when we came in, we found out that somebody had set the temperature at 30 degrees.
Let it snow.
Oh yeah, that's just about it.
I don't have air conditioning at home, so
what?
And I know, so I suffer through the week, and so coming into air conditioning is just. Yeah, I don't care.
You don't care.
I don't care. I'm going to soak this up and let it leach out of me through the day when
you're
I get home.
One of those,
huh? Gary.
And I mean, I guess I could get a window unit, but my wife's dead set against it. So,
Gary, I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Well, you know, Paul W. Smith keeps the studio very, very
yes,
cool.
I
so.
Know.
He must have been using the studio just before us or something.
Yeah. It's as they say, you could hang meat in here. Okay, 800-859-0957 is the number. Let's go to Susan from Detroit. Susan, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Thank you. I'd like some advice on selecting a security system for my computer.
What? Tell me a little bit. Go ahead.
That sometimes you can download things that are free, and I don't understand why. It would be free and safe.
that is kind of an anomaly there. What kind of a computer are you using right now? What operating system?
I have a Mac.
You have a Mac. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, usually on the Macs, I think this one you can go to the App Store and download a lot of free applications.
Absolutely.
But you have to read through them because they have to disclose what those are. You know, what are they taking? Are they stealing? And I'm sorry, not stealing. Are they acknowledging that they're going to look at your contacts and your calendar and your favorites and your mm-hmm. cookies? So are you referring to those type of free applications for the Mac, or are you referring to other websites that you download applications?
I've never downloaded a free one, but I've heard people say, you know.
Yeah,
pay for it. Mm-hmm. And I've also, another question is, I've heard a lot about, it's been a while, though, Kaspersky.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's talking about it anymore, and I was wondering if it's because of the Russian issues we're having.
Oh.
That's good. No, you know, I don't think you have to worry too much about it. I mean, you don't want to overthink it and worry too much. If it's free, yeah, there are companies out there that do free antivirus for Mac, and Avast is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've found that, you know, out of the free ones out there, whether it be Avast or AVG, Avast, to my opinion, was the better one. I like it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Well, McAfee and Norton also make, well, if you, your internet provider usually provides free antivirus for both the PC and the Mac. So if you, if you're paying for your internet service, have you checked with them to see if they're offering free security software?
They say they do offer something. I just didn't know if that's sufficient, whatever.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
Generally speaking, there's kind of, you can be careful with this because some of us who are Mac owners have kind of the attitude of, I don't need any security, which isn't real smart. So there are some products out there, CLAMXV, I believe is, I'll have to look at this again. But anyway, there are some security programs, Avast, et cetera, that are just good to have on top of, and to run occasionally with your Mac. Mm-hmm. But I, to be honest with you, don't have really heavy security on my Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Foster, go ahead, Gary.
And all the bad guys, they're telling you you don't need very good security for the Mac. You don't need it, right? But it's the bad guys telling you that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's the bullseye.
You absolutely need to put antivirus on the Mac. As it becomes a bigger part of the install base, it's going to be more of a target, more and more. There's been some problems already that have have percolated throughout the Mac community. So Avast has always been rated very good for the Mac, and but I think Ed's idea of checking with your internet provider is a good one as well.
Yeah. Now, as if you're looking for free apps, now, Foster, please help me with this because I don't have it on mine, but with the newest version of the Mac OS, don't you have the App Store there?
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
so you can, if you're going to download apps, Apple does a very good job vetting them out.
Yes.
So if you're going to download and look for free apps, they would be, go through the App Store. And that includes games and utilities.
Yes. Very good point.
Okay. And then, but usually when you install them, they have to have that disclaimer, like I said earlier, of this is what we're going to look at. You know, we may want to look at your cookies or we may need access to your internet history. You know, you have to read the disclaimer after when you install it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them advertise during the installation process what they need access to.
We'd also say that malware bytes, and Gary, certainly, and Ed, this is something we've been talking about for a long time. Malware bytes is good and works with the Mac as well. And it's a good antivirus program to run periodically on your computer. Now, you can have either the free version or the paid version. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for your call. That was a good one. I really appreciate your asking that question, Susan.
And sometimes the simplest ones are the good ones, you know, because that's true. There are so many free apps out there, especially for the PC, but for the Mac, that I would start, if you're interested in that, and most people want to look at some type of gaming initially to entertain themselves or mapping programs or, you know, Lineage and Ancestry, try the App Store.
I think that's an excellent point you brought up, Ed, and because with the App Store, you have a level of an extra level of security for Apple products. All right, let's go back to our phone lines and say hello to Dave from Saline. Welcome, Dave. How can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
I have a Dell computer that I bought last year. It came with McAfee antivirus software.
Mm-hmm.
It is about to expire. I have Comcast in my house, and I believe Comcast gives you free Symantec.
I think it is, yes.
It does. It does. It gives you free Symantec. It changes yearly, depends on what deal they get from the company. But it's Windows 10?
Yes.
Yeah, if to be honest with you, I'm one of those guys that says, granted, I like Windows 10 Defender. I like what they put in their antivirus. Mm-hmm. I don't use anything else but Windows Defender.
Me too.
Maybe I'll use a little malware bytes here and there or something like that, a little ADW cleaner. But I would just stick with the Windows. I mean, I don't get... The Windows software is just, you know, Just their antivirus is just as good.
It is. Well, because they participate in the same security forums that all the other antivirus companies do.
Exactly.
They purchased an antivirus company 6 years ago and started offering Windows Defender and with the Windows Vista, I think, even back then when Microsoft first. So they've come a long ways. And I'm like Shane, as a professional IT person, I just have the native Windows antivirus and then Malwarebytes on occasion, and then AW scanner.
Especially with the latest creators update, you want to make sure your Windows 10 is it to the latest creators update.
It's a really key point for the
update. Because that creators update is a big one.
And the thing is, and how you do this, you uninstall your existing antivirus, and as soon as you do, Windows Security comes up and says, hey, you don't have any antivirus. Let me help you select one. And it brings up a page, and in there are just is McAfee, I'm sorry. Who's the other?
Symantec.
I think they've changed it. I don't know. I think now they're really pushing their antivirus package through Microsoft.
It'll pop up as
a notification saying, hey, notice your antivirus is gone.
Would you like to enable?
Would you like to enable the one we provide for you? Mm-hmm. But you got to make sure you got that creators update, because that's the big key to the antivirus.
Let me just, and Dave, you helped us to give us an opportunity to do this, underline that. Get the updates. Yeah. Keep current with the updates, because, you know, that's Microsoft in the background working real hard to make sure that you don't get nailed by some, you know, zero-day exploit that's going on out there. They will do their very best, if you allow them, to keep your machine clean.
But what do we say is always the best protection? Backing up your data.
All right. Well, that's what I was wondering. And I had someone else that told me that Windows has their own software and it's basically a free download and that kind of stuff.
That was my next question.
So it's actually built. You already answered that.
Yeah. It's actually built right into the OS, so you don't have to download it.
Yep, exactly. Okay. The other thing you may have heard Shane say is, if you're backed up and you're backed up regularly, that's one of your best defenses for dealing with attacks. Because if all else fails, there are ways with the Windows operating system to simply wipe everything and go back to a beginning or back to a backup. Am I right on that, guys?
Yes, you are.
So
Go
ahead, Gary.
Over 70% of the attacks are against known vulnerabilities that people just haven't patched.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So if people would patch, 70% of those vulnerabilities would go away.
Yeah, so and I think that's important, because sometimes we think, if I pay enough money and get a big enough suite, then I'll be, you know, bulletproof. And you actually can do some very much simpler things and be safe. Ed, you have any thoughts to add to that?
None at all.
Okay.
That's all right. Excellent.
Okay. Well, I guess then basically you've got me convinced to get the Windows antivirus software. Right. So I'm going to just uninstall the Symantec.
Right.
Or the
whatever, McAfee, yeah.
I'm just going to delete that, and then pretty much automatically my system will notice that I have nothing.
When you reboot, when you reboot, then it'll come up and it'll say, oh, we noticed this, and then it'll let you get to it, okay?
Okay, then I can just go ahead and download that.
Got it, my friend. Hang on a second. I tell you what, if you've got a further question, we'll get you off the air in just a moment. The rest of you, hang on. We got some time. Well, it's been a great afternoon and evening here, but we still have some time left to get a call in or two from you. And you heard that number again, 800-859-0957. Daniel, thank you. Daniel Mason is our engineer and producer, and I want to thank you guys as well for all of you done.
Hey, Shane, when does back-to-school shopping start for college kids and high school kids? I thought so. Like in the last week of July.
Right?
Yeah. Kids need computers when they go to college.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You'll start seeing the sales pop off now. We're at our store, we're starting to sell.
I was going to say, my daughter is going to be going to a semester pretty soon, and her computer's 6 years old, It's time. So I might want to talk to you about that.
Yeah.
Put one aside for me.
Okay.
And you in particular specialize in HPs and Lenovos?
All of them. Everything. Yeah. Lenovo, HP, Dell, you name it, we'll get it. We'll have it in stock.
Now, are Acer's still popular, or is it Asus?
Asus are good. They make a nice little gaming machine.
Yeah, because they're fast. I mean, they're really good
Yeah, I mean, better than
Acer.
Well, they get them confused, Acer and Asus.
Yeah, Asus, and you pronounce it Asus, you know, which is, you know, Pegasus. And
yeah, but they make a nice little entry-level gaming machine.
Yep. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Kathy, who's been waiting patiently in Southfield. Kathy, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Thank you. We have an older Mac, 10 years old, with an OS El Capitan, and Epson printer, and I switched the printer to landscape, and there's no option to switch it back. It doesn't show up a control panel. It doesn't show up an option for landscape or whatever. I don't know what I did. I don't know how it disappeared.
You know, I ran across this at work where we had, it wasn't that old of a computer, but it really depends on the, sometimes the application. Like, we ran across this with Microsoft Word with that generation of printer. But yet when we went into Adobe or we went into the video editing software, we could print landscape. But we did, but you know, because some people wanted the ability to print landscape and other times portrait, and it seemed it was application dependent for the Mac. So usually when you're having print issues, you have to get print driver updates, and the Mac is really good for, it just finds them, right? I mean,
yep.
And have you tried the manufacturer's website for the printer to see if
the other
they're...
One, yeah.
Yes, it's okay. That go to control panel, and there's nothing that shows up anywhere I click that gives me a control panel for the Mac.
Well, no, there is no control panel for the Mac. It's called Preferences. And it's called System
Preferences.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And for the printer, and it doesn't show preference for landscape or portrait.
Have you tried removing the printer and then unplugging the printer from the computer and then removing the printer and then re-adding it? This sometimes helped us in the environment. And then also, after you do that, if you still experience the problem, try different applications that you may have. Try a web browser or try a Microsoft application or an Adobe application and see if you still have the same limitations as far as landscape and portrait. But but just removing the printer itself and then re-adding it again may solve your issue.
So what you would do, what Ed's suggesting, is you go into System Preferences in the Mac, and when you're in there, you can click on Printers. And under printers there, then you will see your printers listed, and you can simply delete that printer from the configuration there, okay?
Right, because sometimes it's very difficult to go into the configuration of the printer once it's added. You really got to get down into it. Yeah. Cal told me about that. And me being in a Microsoft environment, I'm like, well, yeah, but why can't I just right mouse click on the printer and do properties and printer preferences? He says, you can't do that on a Mac. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I said, how do I do it? Because I'm like, you know, the typical Mac basher, right? And he says, just delete the printer, re-add it, and then the settings will be there next time. When you create the printer.
Does that make sense, Kath?
It does, except I had to use tech support to create the printer in the first place because we had the wrong code in there.
So. You mean Apple tech support? Or the,
yes.
Okay, not the printer company, tech support. Did you say it was an Epson?
Yes.
Oh, well, maybe.
I went to Epson tech support, and I got somebody that was real rude and sent me to something that was trying to sell me.
A lot of the manufacturers are doing this, Shane. Now, we talked about, in last week we had people from the cable company that were being shipped over... And they were trying to sell them a $200 antivirus package.
If you are out of warranty or have no support on your product, they will ship you off to a company overseas that they'll split the money in this little deal.
Now, Foster, is it possible to add another printer but point to the same device on a Mac? Because in the Windows environment, we would do that. So before you delete that printer, why don't you just try adding the same printer again?
That's a good point.
And giving it a slightly different name.
Give it a little different name. That's a very good point. I've done that. Yeah, I've done that.
In the Windows environment, I've done that. Just to, you know, say I wanted to have a printer dedicated for portrait and one for landscape. And I used this technique in the old days where I want to do a draft printer, save ink, save the ink, because it costs more than gold per ounce.
Yes.
And then I'd have a final draft printer, which is, you know, bold and, you know, it just sucks up the ink, you know, where you got to blow on the pages.
So, all right, good. All good ideas. I'm almost to my destination. I'm in the car. So
Well, we don't want you. Yeah, we want you to make it to your destination. Yes. So thank you very much for calling, Grady.
All right.
All right, very good. We still have time. If you're giving us a call, matter of fact, we've got a couple of calls coming in right now. That's good. 800-859-0957, and we'll get to them in just a little bit. Shane, do you have a particular printer that you recommend to people when they're
putting together
a package?
Funny question you asked that. Well, in my the way we do things at Comtech is I'll go out once. We don't buy, you know, 50 printers at once. We'll buy 3 or 4 or 5 and keep them in stock. But every month I go out and I look at the reviews. I look at all the reviews, all the recalls, and I find the printer that's doing the best at what they do at that particular moment, and I buy 3 or 4 of those. It doesn't, you know, every month it's somebody new outdoing the other one. So, you know, in that, we always like to keep it around $100, the $100 printer. That's what everyone likes. $100 printers can pretty much do everything.
Yep.
Back, scan, copy, everything.
Multifunction.
So I'll find the best $100 printer that's out there right now at that moment, and that's what I'll bring in. Whether it be a Brother, Epson, Canon, HP. Okay. Haven't had a Canon in the store recently, though.
Yeah.
I've had some Brothers, though. Brothers have been doing a little bit better.
Yeah, there's a print shop that I deal with. It's a refill place that's out in Southfield.
Refill place.
Don't do that.
Shame. What?
So, you know what I do? When I shop for a printer, I look at the cost of the inkjet, the ink refills.
Yes, that's true.
And then I look at the reviews of the printer. As well, that way I can say, let's see, it's going to cost me $99 to buy 3 ink cartridges.
You remember the old, you know, this is your brain on drugs, you know, the whole frying pan, the egg thing. Listen, as someone who makes money selling these things, where you can destroy your printer all you'd like, I can sell you another one, but do not, and I tell people this all the time, do not refill your ink cartridges. Do not buy off-brand ink cartridges. Do not buy off-brand paper. If you buy an Epson printer, by Epson printer paper, Epson printer ink.
Wait a minute.
I mean, it's going to be a little.
You mean it isn't a scam?
No. Cal said the same thing pretty much about the paper. Yeah. They do. It is excellent paper and HP paper. Yeah.
There's a lot of technology that goes into creating that image on that paper. You know, the draw of the paper, how much ink it takes in, the droplets of ink that spread through that toner cartridge. When they're combined, they're being tested together. You know, HP doesn't test their ink cartridges with off-brand generic paper. They test it with HP paper. So when they make those claims that this resolution or this much ink you're going to use, that's according to their paper.
Okay.
So when you use that cheap paper, it's like a sponge. It just sucks it right dry.
And all the colors are just muted.
And when you refill a cartridge,
that's a good point, yeah.
And when you refill a cartridge, you're breaking the seal on the cartridge, which creates a different draw rate of the ink. It just screws the whole thing up, and it all dumps into your ink in your printer.
You know, I'm tired of the refills, too, because I can't tell you how many times I've poked myself. In the old days, you used to use a syringe. I've injected ink into my own veins,
like
it seems.
Ink drug addict.
Yeah. I'm done with that.
Yeah.
I won't even pay anyone to do it. I'm like Shane. I'll just go out and buy the stuff now.
I love it.
Shane, that's a really good point. I knew about the ink because I messed up my printers a few times and had to buy new printers with refilled ink. So I, again, like you guys, don't buy refilled ink anymore.
Yeah.
But I wasn't aware of the paper,
and
that's a really good point.
Yeah,
yeah. I had not thought of that either. Hey, we had a question, guys, just before we head out of here. Somebody called in, couldn't stick around, but their question was they wanted to know about an antivirus system called Sophos, S-O-F-O-S. Mm-hmm. That's out there, right? That's a legitimate,
yeah. Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like there's so everybody and their brother has an antivirus company, and it's there's tons of them out there. If it's something you're not familiar with, just Google it or Bing it, and you'll find some results and people that have used it and reviewed it.
Yeah, and spend some time.
You know, that's used.
Go ahead.
By a lot of companies over in Europe.
Yes.
Is it?
Package.
Oh, that's interesting. Why is it so popular over there, Gary? Do you know?
Well, that's where I think it started.
Oh, I got you.
They just got more marketing traction over there, and it's a corporate buy, I believe. I don't know if many people buy it individually, but I do know a lot of companies that have bought it.
That would be why Kaspersky is also big in Europe, am I right?
It is, but that's big here, too. A lot of professionals use Kaspersky.
You know, they finally got hacked, and they were one of the last ones to get hacked. So everybody now, I believe, has been hacked at least once. but they held out for a long time. Very, very, very good company.
Remember the good old days of Zone Alarm, guys, when we were
Yeah. And you think back to how simple life was back then.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, we that would have been... What about 2000?
We didn't know.
Was it about 2005, I think it was, or 2006? The Zone Alarm was a big... And
2003 is when XP came out, so it would have been on that time frame.
Okay, yeah. And then that started the process where they got bigger. The suite got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Eventually, we all kind of choked
up. You know, I remember talking to a VP in the business unit, and he was saying that since we installed his antivirus, he's seen that we're getting attacked like once a week. This was back a number of years ago. And he was blaming it on the antivirus, and all of us kind of snickered because, you know, he was just finding out that they were attacking him all along. He just now knew it.
He just found that out. Well, Gary, Captain Bly, have a very good week, and set sail with your guests this evening. Enjoy yourselves out there. And Ed Riddell, thank you for being in studio with us.
Always
and
great.
Shane, always good to have you back here with us.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. Look for us at internetadvisor.net.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.